Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Agbabola, Agbabola. How much is money?
It's nothing.
Balling, balling.
Alapa.
Premium or nothing.
Them or nothing.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Ebelebe gebu. Fanye kote na ne me.
Welcome back, everyone, to Couch Chronicles, Therapist After Dark. We're here for a wonderful episode about identity.
Hey!
All right, so let's start off with a mindfulness exercise. You can get into a comfortable position. I'm going to guide you all through an imagery. You can close your eyes if you want to, or just take a low gaze. And we'll start with a few deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. As you settle into your breath, allow any thoughts to drift away. Begin to call to mind a place where you feel settled, a place where you might feel relaxed, warm and loved. Try to imagine the sounds that you might hear in this place. Take a moment to picture what you might see here. Shapes, colors, people. Notice any smells that might be in the air in this place that you feel relaxed, safe, and loved. What kind of textures are in this space? What can you touch here? How would you describe them? If soft and cozy, rough, sharp? What are some textures in this space where you feel loved and safe? Notice the full sensory experience of being in this space. How does your body respond to being here? Take note of what you notice. What is your mind offering you when you're in this space? Really take in how you feel and offering yourself some gratitude for being able to create this space in your mind. when you're ready to come back to the present, you can do so by inviting some movement into the space with a bit of a stretch, moving your fingers and toes, taking a few deeper intentional breaths here at the end. And when you feel ready, gently blinking the eyes open. Okay. What did you all notice about yourselves when constructing your space?
Well, since we're looking at you, though, I noticed that first I struggled to go into my space. And then once I walked into the space, I also noticed that through the space, it transcended to me being around loved ones, to me being by myself.
Okay.
And I just observed that. And then I noticed that at one point, physical sensation of a smile came to my face. But it was towards the end of the exercise, that's when I realized, oh, I'm in a room by myself, and you're good, you're calm, and I just find myself just like in that solace.
Yeah. When you say struggle to get there, what do you mean?
I just couldn't think of a place, and I don't know if it's just I took a couple more deep breaths to kind of ground into it, and just really couldn't visualize something.
Okay, so
like
so
automatic.
I'm hearing that you had to kind of slow down at the beginning. To really allow that space to come to you versus searching for it, looking for it.
Exactly.
Nice. Thanks, Jay. What about you, Steph?
So I noticed that immediately I felt a sense of, like, just stillness. When you had kind of, like, said, like, go to that place that you feel kind of, like, comfortable or I immediately went to, like, my bed. And noticed there was some thoughts about, like, that being a place. Like,
you love it
that's
there.
That's definitely your safe space. I do love it there. Because it first started out, my couch was, like, starting to load up in my mind. And then it was, like, the bed's actually a lot much more. And I noticed, like, imagery around, like, my blanket.
Yeah.
The color of it. The texture. How it's, like, big and, like, pillowy and cloudy. When I was thinking of, like, when you said shapes, I kept going to, like, circles, like, just kept coming in my mind, and I'm not sure if that's what I would say I would put in my, like, space of, like, safety or comfort, or if that's just the shape that just kept coming to my mind.
Yeah.
And as I tried to, like, expand to think about, like, triangles, I was like, that seems not right there. It felt like not. And stars, no, that doesn't feel right there. So going back to circles, clouds, and still going, bouncing back and forth with that pillowy, like, vibe, pretty much. And then, like, colors of, like, pink, soft pink with, like, the blue of my blanket would show up. And then when you went to sounds, I noticed I was immediately brought to the sounds of, like, birds, like, in, like, a forest or, like, sea, like, that very, where there's a distance where you can hear them, but they're not, like, gawking in your ear, but it's, like, a nice...
They're in the background.
Wind, right,
yeah.
type of thing. Yeah, feeling, like, really being able to get to that. And then also silence. So it would either be... when you directed us to sound of the birds, or it was just nothing at all, but really kind of sticking with the textures and just what that experience was like. And then having, like, I think you had asked us or had said something about, like, who you would invite or who would be
like
there.
People. Who'd you see? Yeah. So
and this pretty much a thought that idea has been spinning in my mind for the last couple of days. And that's kind of the figure that I saw there with me. But it was... more of like a, instead of like a person, more of like a figure, like just laying there with me and feeling a sense of like warmth in like that embrace.
Yeah.
And that feeling, like that's what it was, just feeling embraced by my covers, by my, and that just feeling like nice.
That being the touch for you.
Yeah.
In my experience, I immediately had a place in mind, like as soon as I started talking about what, like, creating the place. And then I had, like, a lot of future thinking around, like, well, when am I going to get there? We're already almost done with the first quarter of the year, and I haven't touched a lick of sand. So, like, that was definitely an active thought, and I think that that has gone along with a feeling that I've just been having today mm-hmm. around like angst, like hurry yeah. up
yeah.
and get to the good parts, the warmth, the mm-hmm. breeze, okay. the pink sand.
And then when you were there, were you able to stay there? Outside yeah. of worrying about when, you know, those other thoughts.
Once I got there, I was able to get into just kind of being in the space, really noticing the textures. Mm-hmm. But thinking about those things also brought up memories. And so it definitely had me kind of engaging in some thinking
okay.
as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you. Let's get into it. How do you identify? This is going to be a juicy topic today.
I think it is. I definitely think it is. And I think our listeners, our confession is actually pretty good. Yeah. So let's listen to our confession.
Sure. I've been working on connecting with myself to develop a more authentic identity. I tend to adopt traits, hobbies, and even temperaments from people I admire, creating a version of myself that feels more like a performance than the real me. I've struggled with this since early childhood and often overthink identity in abstract,
unattainable
ways. With my therapist's help, I'm trying to see identity as something more concrete. I recently started journaling to map out my values, strength, and temperament, and physical traits. But I still question whether my likes, dislikes, beliefs are truly mine or just absorbed from others. How can I differentiate the real me from the
persona
I've built? What practical strategies help others develop a true sense of self?
Questions about who am I mm-hmm. versus who society tells me or who mm-hmm. I've thought I'm supposed
subscribed
to be,
yeah.
things of that, as well as trying to create a roadmap to be more authentic, it seems like, and more yeah. genuine in this, in their selves.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the question I think I have around this as I'm thinking about it is that can we ever truly have an identity that isn't influenced by others, or is individuality just like an illusion?
You know, I don't know that there is really ever a time where you will not be influenced by something.
Yeah.
Whether it is the things that you consume, the people that you're around, the culture, the environment, mm-hmm. there's no way to develop your identity without those things. So mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like a fine line of how the ways that you identify, how does that also align with your values mm-hmm. and interests mm-hmm. and like, how can you look at it more from that perspective versus just like wanting to be something to fit into a space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think that when we talk about identity, identity is naming, right? Mm-hmm. Who you are. Identity is belonging to something. And if yeah. you think about like the simplest form, the ways that we are identified in this world is through our name,
yeah.
which is being given and influenced by someone else.
Yeah.
Right. So already. Yeah.
Right off the bat, right? Like mm-hmm. there's certain expectations, certain things that go into the name that mm-hmm. you are called by your caregivers, by your parents, right? Mm-hmm. So that already is going to carry something.
Yeah.
And also, I think this individuality, I don't think is an illusion, right? I don't necessarily think that just because we are influenced by others from mm-hmm. our conception that we cannot be individual mm-hmm. from the group. Mm-hmm. But if we look at like, can we ever truly have an identity that isn't influenced by others? No. Because our values, to even know what you're not about, you have to know
yeah.
what you are in,
right?
Yeah. Right, and so your mm-hmm. family tells you what you are in, right? From mm-hmm. your race mm-hmm. to your traditions, to yeah. your religion, to mm-hmm. How you dress, mm-hmm. to how people perceive you. You mm-hmm. already start to think about other people's idea of you
yeah.
from your parents and your And I'm saying the parents, some of us people have caregivers,
yeah.
some people have like extended family
who's yeah,
very
who
impactful in their lives,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that you cannot be influenced right. by something. Mm-hmm. I do think individuality can stem from the things that we are in, right? Just right. because my family celebrates and champions this thing,
yeah.
I'm individual from that because I see a different way right. to yeah. show up, to champion other things.
I think here's the thing. I think identity is the whole idea. I mean, this is why we're in the field that we are in, around like knowing who I am and why does it matter. At a very early age, I think for me, with my parents, I think it's the whole idea. It was like a spiritual thing, right? Around the fact that, you know, you are God, you're wonderfully made. God created you as you. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I didn't struggle with identity, but I know there was a sense of urgency of knowing where I belong in my family mm-hmm. as who I am.
Mm, like what your role was.
Yeah, what my role was. And early on, I also felt like it was put on me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my parents would be like, oh, this is a wild one right here. Like mm-hmm. our middle child, you know. So for me, there was a need to live up to whatever was considered wild, mm-hmm. right? Because I was hyper, I was fun, I was this. So for me, that automatically, like, what I attach to. But I think sometimes people, especially now, with all the different changes and the way identity and identifying,
so much different language
I think it
now.
Brings about confusion, and that's just my stance on it. I think it brings more confusion for people around the urgency to feel belonging and the urgency of questioning who they are. I think innately, with your experiences, you tend to develop like the different things. I think the need to belong to a specific thing, to feel connected to a specific thing. And I think the fact that we live in a society who just keep bombarding us with all this over information. I'm one who believe that too much information can just be too much for people.
It can be too much to sort out.
It makes you question everything. So then I think it get lost. I think with this confession is around the fact that with this person, they've been bombarded, but they at some point they learn that, you know, taking different pieces of that they see in their friends and family members is something that was inauthentic to who they are.
Yeah.
And the word authentic sometimes just irks me, because then who's defining that?
Yeah.
Right?
This is relatable for sure. I think I had a lot of experiences that were similar to that, like growing mm-hmm. up, just because I think I grew up in an environment that was not affirming to like who mm-hmm. I genuinely felt like. I was an energetic kid. I had a lot of opinions. Mm-hmm. I was making a lot of observations mm-hmm. and having a lot to say.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a space where people did not want to hear from my black ass. They're like, this little black girl has got too much to say.
Yeah.
So I think that I was often corrected, or mm-hmm. like almost every report card said, she's great at her academics, she talks entirely too much. Mm-hmm. So just imagine like how you're internalizing that as a kid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That comes up as an adult as like you don't want to have too much to say.
Right. Or get upset when somebody shuts you down.
I've fluctuated between that, right? I think that in my more like spicy years, like mm-hmm. my like late teens, 20s, like college mm-hmm. years, I was very much like on the extreme side. I'm mm-hmm. not going to be letting anybody tell me that I can't say what I need to say, or like if you are shutting me down in any way, that's a fight. Those are fighting words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that like having to really figure out like my identity, I don't really think I settled on like what I felt was it until I was like 30. Yeah.
Or felt comfortable.
I
guess I kind of want to go back, Jay, because Jay, you and I have had this conversation a lot. And let me just be clear. I disagree. Okay. Yeah. I disagree a lot about labels. And I think the uptick of labels, I think, is needed, because there's a lot of people who have been given a singular message about who you are, what gender looks like, how you're supposed to show up, how other people are supposed to see you. And the labels, question that. And I think questioning is important so that you then like look for more. Because, yeah, like, there's a lot of people, and I'm sure, Tyler, with your upbringing, like, mm-hmm, you were saying, there was a lot of messaging around how you're supposed to dress. Because I remember absolutely, you told me about, like, religion aspect of your right, upbringing. How you're supposed to dress, how you're supposed to show up, how you're supposed to be seen by the outside world. And it's not until you start hearing, yeah, terms that aren't in the singular,
yeah,
place that you're in, mm-hmm, that you then be like, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? Oh, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's why I've been, yeah, feeling weird or like, mm-hmm, not fully committed or, yeah, like to this,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, oh, there was this other thing out there that you could be. So that's why for me, I think that the more labels that are coming out there allows people to feel belong, like they can belong to something.
Yeah.
Or feel like, oh, actually, I don't need to be just one thing. I can be multiple things.
I think that's
that, like, what
end,
I have,
yeah,
seen is that a lot of people are picking stuff and seeing that identity is not that one color.
Yeah.
I can have purple, I can have blue, I can have red, I can have orange, I can have all of these things.
Yeah.
And the interaction of all these different entities is what makes up me. Mm. That's what makes up my identity.
I think you make a great point, mm-hmm, around that. I think that perhaps that we're looking at a both and here, right?
Yeah.
Because I think you make some really great points around, in my own personal experience, I felt like I was able to understand more about my identity through exposure, through different language. And I do think that having more discussion and language that people are putting to stuff allows for that exposure, questioning. I can also see at the same time how that can create some confusion or oversaturation. And so it really is a matter of like, how can you find what you're looking for and how can you be supported in looking for that?
And to the point that I'm making and I continue to make, so yes, you and I do have like a fundamental disagreement around that, is the fact that we don't do labels, but labels matter to people.
Right.
And that's the part where I'm like, you know, you don't want to attach yourself to anyone because you say, well, I'm not just this one person. But in a way, you actually do want to attach yourself to something to feel like you belong, like to this group, to this culture, to,
yeah,
understanding even your sense of self. And I think with this, it's like with this person, okay, now I'm journaling, now I'm doing this, now I'm doing all these things. And then now I'm still questioning, is this a persona or this is really me? And this is the part where I said the oversaturation become too much, because it's really, to me, it's about being and living. I've always felt like if I can just be me, whatever that means for that day, that moment, then that's really fine. What matters.
Yeah.
And I think and don't get it confused with social norms and expectations and traditions. You know, I come from a tradition where I do question it. You know, I'm like you, Tyler, where I'm like, now, look, at a very early age, I didn't really care for women of my culture. I just, yeah, did not. I just felt like it was a yes, sir, and ma'am type of culture. I actually honored the male authority. I was very attracted to that,
mm-hmm,
in a sense of like there was more liberation. There was more freedom, yeah, and power. And so for me, at an early age, I gravitated more towards like my father, and he kind of willed me in around the fact that he had free choice. Now I was a little bit too free, you know what I mean? Like, so part of that, I think, is that for me, it had to change for me to understand what being a woman or being a girl actually meant.
Yeah.
But it was never taken away from me to act either or. Was I judged? Because I remember my parents was like, you know, she's too much. Like,
yeah,
the idea of being too much. Like,
too much,
okay,
yeah,
you guys need to slow her down. But then there was my parents also coming to terms like, we have two daughters who are completely opposite of each other. And my father, I think, never wanted to tame me, but my mother wanted to tame me out of the fact that that's not how a girl should be acting. So
yeah,
why does that matter? I think it's all about, like, you can challenge social norms and tradition. I think it's an idea of, are you challenging it because it's not connecting to you, or is it just you just in a state of being on a day to day. So I think if people just be, they don't want to be labels, but technically you hold on to labels. So my whole thing is, if we're oversaturated with, you know, we have this, you could be this, you could be that, you could be that, you could be that, to me, that tend to cause a sense of confusion around in a state of just being.
Okay, so then
and
let
that's
me.
That's where I'm at with
so
it.
So let me add on top of that, because I agree with the thing about, like, if you are authentic and present in the moment, being able to figure out who you are isn't as difficult, right? But can I just call out a fundamental difference between what you were saying in your experience and what Tyler experienced? You got support.
Right.
In that exploration. You got some level of guidance and some level of cover, like covering to some extent.
Yeah. Right.
From what I've heard with Tyler, there was a very much
not a lot of support.
No kind of like encouragement. And I know even from my experience, not only there wasn't any support, there was often a lot of like pain. A lot of people who tend to be confused. I think it's less.
But I was also isolated because of the way that I chose to live.
True.
It's just in a different how it affected me.
Different. That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying you had different protective factors. Is what I'm trying to point out in comparison to the folks who you say that tend to be confused about who they are. There was a mortal wound very early on,
right,
that disrupted their ability to just be.
Yeah.
So like that thing of like, oh, I need to belong. That belonging comes with a certain level of stability that I never experienced. So it's like I do this hop, skip thing of like, am I this? Am I this? Am I this? Searching for grounding and a certain like acceptance. Yeah. But if my family, my what's it called, loved ones, my environment never validated or recognized me in any kind of capacity and kept trying to shove me into being
box,
this thing,
like being a certain
I'm not going to feel or even know what it's like to just be. That's where I think that you and I like have see things a little bit differently is because I do agree that being helps
it's
you.
It's necessary,
sitting and grounding
it's hard
and
to
being
get there.
Present. But if you didn't get a roadmap, nobody taught you, nobody even recognized you when you attempted to. That's why it's like, let me go to some identity or some label that will maybe give me that guidance, maybe give me
so
that
then,
blueprint.
So then is identity more like a personal issue than it is like a social issue, like a larger social norm issue? Is it a both and? Or because technically with this, it's like sometimes, especially now, some people just aspire due to social media influence a lot regarding like
how
the youth identity and how they identify.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lack of deep community connection.
I think that it is.
What is the struggling with identity?
Social media has maybe heightened some ways that people have access to communities that they can connect to. And that has in turn impacted the identity. But I think that looking to your community or looking to your environment or the things that are around you is a natural way that people have identified throughout time.
Right.
I think for me, I grew up in an area that was mixed culturally, but kind of classes. So there was a lot of like have and have not kind of energy, and I kind of found myself in the have realm, but that was like racially limited. I think that it's not necessarily that I did not have the support. I think for my like family, they definitely did the best that they could to like just allow me to be myself, to question when I had questions and things like that.
Yeah.
But the world around me didn't like that. So I got a lot of that from like teachers, other authorities, that other adults that were like, I talk too much, I share too much, I'm not in a child's place, I'm not being a good girl. And so I think I picked up on that throughout my life. And so that translated into this idea of like, I can... Once I got to maybe like high school, I'm like, I know how this works. I know that I can be exactly who or whoever this group or this person needs me to be.
It's like chameleoning
in order to
yourself.
Fit in.
Yeah,
so I
so
could
like with
be
the reader,
friends
like,
with
yeah.
anyone. I could be friends with anyone. I could hang out in any spaces. I could be with.
So would you call
all
that chameleoning, like, or faking it till you make it type of thing?
I would maybe say it was more like code switching. But
can you talk
me,
about what code switching is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that code switching has been something that Black people have done mm-hmm. for survival. Mm-hmm. Some people have kind of transformed it now into like some ways that they try to present themselves as being more superior. Mm-hmm. I always commend the young people because they said, fuck having a work voice.
They sure
and
do.
I love them for that.
Yeah, same Even,
and I know that like older people can't stand it. And I'm just like, why do they have to talk differently? You know what the fuck they're trying to say.
Yeah.
I think I've had to come to that.
Yeah.
Because I had really grew up in a space where it's like, you have to act this certain way to do these certain things to get this certain lifestyle to look this certain way. And so.
So how did that code switching or how did that having to constantly change yourself either affected your sense of self in a personal way, or did it affect it?
Yes.
Or did you feel like it opened it up? Like, what was that?
I think that it just really made it hard for me to really know who I was and what I wanted mm-hmm. because I was able to kind of conform into whatever someone else was wanting. I didn't really have a lot of information around what it was that I was looking for mm-hmm. until I kept running into experiences that it felt like it would feel like it was not enough. It would feel uncomfortable or feel like it wasn't for me, but I couldn't quite put my finger on what was happening because I'm having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I'm having a good time. I'm getting that social acceptance, that social capital. It's also, I'm having a slightly different kind of thought process because growing up, I've always known like who I was and mm-hmm. questioned a lot of things of like why men can do this and women can't do that. Mm-hmm. Why is this look like this and this doesn't do that? But I, even though my like identity of who I was the first born who, like you said, with expectations, knew my role mm-hmm. in the family is to walk a straight line, mm-hmm. to get the good grades, to, and mind you, I know my mom and my dad would often say, you are a,
Example.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Your siblings look to you. So always feeling like there's
I didn't give a shit about that. Yes. I was the middle child.
Literally always thinking about who's looking mm-hmm. at me, who's like, mm-hmm. who am I also involving in my thought process and my decision making? And to the point that like, when my siblings do things and they do not consider me, it's like a hurt like that happens in me because I always
you
like it's
to,
a,
you
like,
were trained you to consider
it. And that's part of my identity, right? Like it's literally is I am the lighthouse like that is always constantly looking and monitoring. And I mind you, it's that's something that was given to me, but something I've embraced at this particular point, right? Like I knew this is who I was. I've always been intelligent, but I've always talked. I like talking, like, and I also got the similar things of great grades, talks a hell of a lot, right? Like, but also the talk, I also, with the code switching piece, right, me, it was different. I'm African.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. My mom had, what's it called, got schooling from London, England. Britain, uh-huh. so she has a British accent. Mm-hmm. My dad is Nigerian, like, so my accent, the way that I speak, the way that I, even my, mm-hmm. like, verbiage, mm-hmm. see, words that I use, right? A lot of people immediately would either, one,
assign whiteness.
Ridicule me? What am I trying to prove?
Well, yeah.
What, prove, how, me, just my existence, just me being me just asking certain questions, all of a sudden, is a rebellion. Like, that's when I started to notice that my identity, like, as a woman, was somehow like being like impeding on other people's stuff by just being myself, because it would be me like asking questions or being as, you know, demanding or as assertive as other people, and then being looked at as like, what audacity do you have to do these things?
Yeah.
Right. Or with my Black counterparts, oh, you're acting white. Oh, you're acting uppity. You're doing these things. And mind you, I'm just speaking regularly. Like that is regular to me. To me, code switching would look like, I guess, me speaking with what they call African African. That would be what it looks like for me. It's not me talking more professional, or because that's the natural way that comes out of my mouth. It would be me engaging in language that is.
I'm glad you brought that cultural aspect up too, because I think that that perhaps has some things to do with it, like being an African American. I think that I really don't have a significant amount of like cultural traditions that align with identity. That is something that was intentionally stripped away from us. They wanted us to not be able to identify so we couldn't be free.
Yeah, because so I was thinking with Tyler, when I first met Tyler, I thought Tyler was Caribbean.
Yeah.
Down so to I her last name. So I was just like, when she, you told me you were just Black American, I was like, oh.
No, but I feel like because I kind of grew up in a space where I had a lot of access to like Caribbean culture, and I also have, I look at people that are from different Caribbean cultures as like audacious and mm-hmm. free, mm-hmm. energetic. I feel like that's something that I've always been drawn to.
Maybe that's the part that's innately in you.
Yeah. Right? I think that you connected is just because I'm like, this like a diaspora thing.
Yeah. And I think that plays a role. That's the thing I think with identity. I think it's, you know, where I can kind of, that's where part I go into our natural state,
yeah.
right? Because even like with my friends who are just African American, I'm like, you could always tell ancestral, like without even doing your, you know, your DNA network or stuff like that.
Have to pay for that.
But that part, I don't think so either. But I do think the fact that it's really the state of just being and living under your skin and what it looks like. And also, I get it, like having the freedom or the support to actually do that. So even as you gravitated towards the Caribbean culture, was there a cultural appropriation that Etana talked about?
Sure. So like the cultural appropriation thing, I think that has, I've been really more sensitive to that in my adult life. Like just wanted to be very careful about like, what is the difference between appreciating and appropriating?
Yep.
I'm in no way acting like I'm from somewhere that I'm not. Right. I just have grown to appreciate that particular culture. But I think I've come to realize that perhaps attaching to things that align with like freedom and like power as a woman to me has been something that I've been attracted to for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I would say in middle school, I went through this whole phase around wanting to be, I hate this fucking word, but wanting to be ghetto. I went through this phase of wanting to be, and specifically wanting to be a DC girl. I looked at DC girls, and I still do today. I have my family's from DC, so I've kind of always been around and immersed in that culture, but I am not. But I always looked at them as like free, audacious, saying what they wanted to say, not taking no shit. And I came from a place where it's like, you need to be a good girl. You need to not talk too much. You need to not say too much, not prim rock the boat. Right. So that was like, oh, I'm that.
Yeah.
Y'all are docile and I'm that.
Yeah.
So I think I went through this time where it's like I had associated that with being ghetto.
Yeah.
And that I had to kind of like learn that, like, well, that's really not what that is. You want to be free.
It's a culture within itself.
You want to be able to say what you want to say. You want to be firm in what your beliefs are. You don't, I don't even really know. To me, I don't really know what it means to be ghetto at this point.
That's a really good, honestly, that's a really good point, because I will say that in African culture, I can't speak for all Africans,
right,
but I know in Nigerian culture, ghetto is seen as lower than, less than, less educated, rowdy, right? You talk about audacious, it's rowdy, it's what's called shaking the table unnecessarily, bringing attention to yourself in a negative light. But I wanted to talk a bit about like being a good girl, and you even had said the same thing too about like what your mom did not endorse.
Like girls aren't supposed to act
some of those things.
I tell all the time, I said, it's the shh.
Yeah.
But you want to know what, and it was, and my mom used to do the very much thing, because I remember growing up, I hated wearing dresses, which is so interesting.
Girl, like a mofo shit.
But compared to me now, right? Like, I used to hate wearing dresses, skirts, anything that made me feel or seen as softer.
Yeah.
And mind you, not feminine, soft like weak specifically, because in Nigerian culture, there's a clear hierarchy between men and women. Men are seen more powerful. They're the ones that have the control. They're the ones that do the direction. They're the ones that discipline. They're the ones, while women are the lieutenants. They're the ones that help the general get the stuff done. And I didn't like that dynamic growing up. I did not.
You wanted to be a general.
I wanted to be the one in power, because there was a lot of, mind you, also, it was also what was pumped into me as the older person, that I was the general.
I was the leader.
But going back with my mom, it was about, like, now that I'm older and I look at this identity, this hyper feminine identity that is placed on us women, but specifically Black women, right? About dressing a certain way, looking. And my mom used to be every time.
Because you don't want to be scary.
I would come to her house and just coming to see her and wearing sweatpants. And she's like, why are you dressed? I'm like, because I'm coming to see you. And she's like, well, you don't know who will see you on. And I'm like, what
and
are
I
you talking
about? I don't give a fuck
But it used to make me so upset because it's like, well, why do I need to care all the time? Because again, the eyes on me, right? I'm already feeling like there's eyes on me. So it's like, why do I always have to consider whose eyes are on me? But it was for protection.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, even with me being smart, even with me being, I believe, kind and warm and just how my natural kind of thing. People already assume that I'm aggressive, I'm mean, I'm, what's it called, a danger.
Yeah, so, and I had to realize, I had to come to terms with in my own, like, search for who I am, I had to come to terms with that that's not my fucking problem.
But it's not your fucking problem, but unfortunately, that's, even though it's not our problem, we're still
stigmatized.
We're stigmatized, but
also labeled.
Like, it's not even like, my thing is not even that. It's like, it's kind of like if somebody shits on your front door, it's not, you didn't do, but you still got to clean up with it. If me coming up to you, and if I'm just like sharing
and profiling,
my opinion,
it's like a profiling.
Intellectually, like I'm in class and I'm talking about things, mind you, all of a sudden, oh, why are you talking? I'm talking too much.
Right.
I'm doing these things. If I, mind you, if I dress proper, all of a sudden people are much more with ease.
It's inviting.
They're much more willing to take and lean into what I say if I look a certain way versus if I don't.
But that's the whole thing with Black boys in hoodies.
Yeah,
the
respectability politics.
Yeah, right.
Or Black women in bonnets.
In bonnets.
And, oh,
yeah,
you're
like,
less than in your ghetto.
Don't even know. That conversation. Like,
but it just because, but it comes. It
wear your bonnet, y'all. Just wear your bonnet.
Do that, but it also, we also have to recognize, do that, and it comes with certain consequences, right? And that's why we talk about with identity is that that hyper-feminism that our parents, our mothers specifically instilled to us was because unless you were dolled up.
That's what helped them
unless
survive.
You were, you would have been beaten. You would have been dehumanized. Like you would have been seen. And I have experienced that.
Yeah.
It felt
for sure.
I think
that the trash thing about it is that the dehumanization of Black women will happen even if you are showing up in those ways that are for your, that are respectable or that are appropriate. Yeah. And I think that that is the lesson that I had to learn in order for me to be okay with, like, it doesn't matter. I can perhaps learn how to take whatever those consequences are and find the spaces that are for me versus trying to, like, make sure that I can be palatable.
Yeah.
I can't.
I mean, so, I mean, it's not that I don't, I disagree. I guess my thing about it, going back to, like, the person was saying about, like, identity, and, like, we've been with clients who wanted to shift their gender identity because of what we're talking about
right
now. Because of the fact that, like I said, I didn't want to be seen as weaker and softer and as a target because of what I wore. And I don't know about you guys. I see an uptick of girls who were assaulted, who were looked down upon, who feel the weight of, like, what it is to be a woman, wanting to shift. Like, have
they
a different identity
gender.
And to be seen and not have to hold on to these, like, feminine things. Like, I have a client that talks a lot about, like, their figure, right, is more feminine in terms of, like, hippie and all those other things. But it almost, like, perpetuates this thing of I'm a sexual creature that people will perceive. So it's like I want to be seen as something blank.
Not
that.
That
nobody will put that on me.
Yeah.
So shifting the conversation. So in saying this, identity does matter.
Yes.
And how do we teach people and how do we ourselves start to live in this authentic, or as that I would like to call it, natural state, in our natural state of self? Because I think that's really what people are missing and yearning for, is identifying what is my natural state of self.
I think it takes a lot of affirming and support. And sometimes the support piece is where we don't have as much control because I do think that, like, you have to perhaps find yourself in spaces where you can practice just showing up, just being yourself, whether that is the pleasant version of you or the version that is difficult to manage. Mm-hmm. And you also have to be reinforced in those spaces. So okay. that's where that support comes in. Like, I have to be in relationships with people where I can say, I had a shitty ass day and I don't want to talk, and not be told that I'm not being a good friend or I'm not being a good person because I'm not showing up the same exact way every time. Mm-hmm. So, but it takes practice and that support from your environment. And some people don't have that. So they spend their lifetime trying to find a land on their identity.
Yeah. Or know how to cultivate it. I guess another thing for me in terms of, like you said, is listening to yourself, because the the confession said that they are... they have a tendency to, like, almost absorb
other people,
the interests, the values, the demeanors of other people. Yeah. I guess the question is, what about those traits, attributes, or those things are attractive to you? Because sometimes the attraction might be connected to what you actually enjoy, or are you attracted to it because of what you can get? And that's a difference.
Yes, that could perhaps be the thing around like how you can discern between, like, is this something that I'm genuinely interested in? Or is it something that I'm, like, doing to mask, survive?
Mm-hmm. Or is it changing and flipping with the season? That also will tell you if it's, like, more of a fleeting thing, minus the ADHD folks with our interests.
Or the neurospicy.
But I'm saying, like, think about, like, for example, for me, I've always been someone who's into, like, Asian culture, Asian things. I mean, anime, K-pop, food, like, and that's a reoccurring thing that every person who knows me
knows
that that is something that I enjoy, never changes, never shifts. People also, I remember something that did change, right, in terms of identity. Growing up, I would say I wasn't a competitive person, right? I was like, when they asked me.
That's a lie.
But at the time, they asked me, I was 12, 13 years at the time, when they were like, oh, are you competitive? It was right before I started getting recruited for basketball. And I would say no, because I was not put in an environment outside of maybe academics
that you had to
where I would have been competitive. Because the only way, it's not like you can be outwardly competitive in math class. You can't be like, fuck yeah, I got A+. Like, you're not like you're not about to do that and celebrate in front of people. But when I started playing sports, when I started, like, put in environments in where I'm competing for a position, then that part of me started to flash out. So talking about the question of, is identity something inherent versus something that's learned? It's both and. Because my competitive nature definitely showed up later in life, and I can embrace it and sit in that and not feel, oh, women aren't supposed to be competitive, so let me not show too much about
it. Or when they compete,
it.
They're supposed to still be nice girls.
Right. Yeah. Or don't have talk emotions too much with a boy. Don't make a boy feel, what's it called, dumb. Well, he's dumb, he's dumb. That has nothing to do basically with me.
Don't even get me started.
You know, for me, I mean, look, I feel like this has always worked for me in a sense of just believing that I just am.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am wonderfully made. God created me as such. And also, I think it's important. I have learned now in my beautiful age, I have learned that I do need to have some limitations, some boundaries with myself, and not to oversaturate myself, because it does cause confusion to your mind, and to just really take it on a day to day of what I need to function as me, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So that's just how I kind of, you know, I think we should kind of close out with that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
What are your thoughts about also the people that you're around? Because I think oversaturation can happen when you have energies and people that don't align or are in contradiction.
That's the part of the boundaries that I'm talking about, right? But that's exactly what I mean, boundaries with myself, that I can't be exposed to everyone.
To every single person. Especially because you're such a, like, warm and kind and empathetic. And, like, people gravitate a lot to you and your energy. And it took a while and a lot of me being like, girl. Like, to separate yourself from, like, I don't always have to make space for these other people and other things. But I, like, think about how, like, when I entertain certain friendships, like, growing up, like, the the situations that I would place myself in,
right?
I wouldn't do that if it was just me.
Exactly.
Like, and exactly. See, and that's even what though I mean. It led to lessons that I think further sharpened like my identity and like, oh, who I am, or like, oh no, like I didn't have to like test this. Like, I know that this is me, right? Like, it helped just kind of like fortify this idea that like your values and who you are sharpened by the people that you're around. Like, being around you guys genuinely like fills me with joy, not because, oh, I get stuff from you guys, which obviously I do. I get the abundance of joy, advice, like, you know, care and nurturing and all of those other things. But like, you guys also provide direction. Like, Jay, you're always really good at being like, okay, I know that you've been having this going on, but you know, you've been talking about this and this is what's something that you're about, like, you know, and you're really good at being like, okay, like, you were talking about this thing, like, what, like, so you guys are very good at helping move in the direction of what's important to me.
So what community, like, what I'm hearing is that we say that like community and support matters.
Yes.
Okay, it does. It does. So let's transition to our listener's letter.
Okay.
And see how that goes.
My mom was abusive to me as a kid and is kind of a terrible person all around. Just really horrible to everybody and has completely isolated herself with no friends or family or anyone in her life because of her behavior. She also would not be the kind of person to want to work on herself or take responsibility. It always is the other people who are out to get her or it's their fault. I know she has a therapist, and this has made me wonder, in situations like this, what is it like for the therapist? Do you try to challenge people's thoughts, or do you just let them vent about everyone else in every session, even if they're not making progress? Is it tough to be a therapist in this situation, or it's fine?
Yes, it is tough to be a therapist in those situations, and it depends on what type of therapist you are.
Sure is.
To see if you're going to call your clients out or not. The type of therapist that the three of us are, DBT therapists, yes, you are going to be called out. We behavioral as fuck. But really, people be lying to their fucking therapists. So who knows what your mom is showing.
Like, well, at least these three therapists here know that y'all be lying.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know about everyone else. But I think that we're under the healthy suggestion or the idea that, oh, you're not telling us the full story.
And my clients can see it on my face when I don't believe them, unfortunately.
You know, you know what I do when I know a client is not fully telling me the full story? I always say, I want to be clear. I'm only hearing your version of it, so we're just going to focus on that. That's my secret thing, because I'm like, bitch, I know you're lying. I know this was more than what you're saying.
Mine is, help me understand why the other person would respond that way.
Yeah.
What information might they have about you that would make them question you or even show up this way?
I think the type of therapy that we have requires that accountability.
Yes.
The type of therapist that we are.
Yeah.
Your mom could perhaps be going to a therapist, or if your mom is the way that you have described her, she could perhaps know what type of therapist that she wants to
go to.
If you are looking for a therapist that is going to just allow you to vent, that will just validate your experience, you can find that.
Yeah.
Also, she might be seeing a CBT therapist because, as you noted, the thought is people are out to get her. So that would be, the therapist would probably work with them challenging those thoughts, looking at those cognitive distortions. Mm-hmm. But just because you know that you're engaging in like black or white thinking of like, it's either this thing or this thing, doesn't necessarily mean that you have the tools in real time to combat the experience that happens. There's a reason why they say it's a mental health thing, because your brain, right,
you've convinced it
connects to multiple different things. So your mind, while it's running this narrative of people are out to get me and it's always other people, your body is
creating
also
the things,
confirming things in it. And your vision is also spotting things that reinforce that thing. So regardless of how much you toss it in your mind, the result is going to be the same unless you hit a specific type of therapist that works on acknowledging that these things will show up for you while really like carving your behavior around who you want to be.
I think I'm glad that you brought that up too, because it sounds like the reader also has her own specific narrative about mom. And perhaps maybe from based on their experiences and in a different way.
But also therapy, let me be clear. Not a therapist shouldn't be keeping client as a client if there hasn't been any progress made. The point of having a treatment plan is to ensure that whatever the goal the client and the therapist outlined they're for themselves, there should be work towards progress. Be clear that your mom, she whatever years of the way that you experience her has been, it's not going to take 3, 4, 10, 20 sessions for her to start really engaging. When people get the first hand to even talk to somebody, it does become vomiting. It does become a sense of like victimizing. And then it may take after 6 to 8 months for the therapist to kind of switch it back around to, or 3 months, you know, it don't take me that long, because I'm telling you, it don't take me that long. But to switch it back around and be like, okay, well, let's look at these different entities. Yeah. So being very mindful, also telling the reader, focus on yourself and be straight with your mom about how you are experiencing her when you interact with her. And even consider, if you yourself have your own therapist, having family session. Adult or not, you could always have family session with your adult parent if they are willing. Because if she's open to going to therapy, I'm pretty sure she's also open to possibly having therapy with you. So you and her can outline the way that you've experienced her. And to the last part, you know, is it tough to be a therapist in this situation? Not for me, though. No, I was gonna say not for me, because for the simple fact, I actually take on, like, your mother would be the perfect client for me because I would eat her alive. But either way, like, I take on and I welcome these type of clients only for the simple fact that people are trying to healing. The fact that she's going to therapy to me, that's a plus. That's and an the in, fact, yeah. So I want you to focus on that and also focus on you as the child, or the adult child, because, you know, I don't know your age, around knowing that she's taking that first step to becoming a better version of herself in her healing process. Can I take advantage of that to also see, let her know how I experience her? So that's my take on that.
I was also going to add this piece of that, like what you said with the treatment plans, is just because you as the adult child is not seeing the progress doesn't mean that progress is not being made. Because it's like, what did the mom,
what's the standard,
initiate therapy for? Might not have been for the things that you think that the person should initiate therapy for, and that's where the discrepancies kind of lie. And like you said, building rapport takes time, and different clients are on different levels of openness and willingness to kind of like conquer certain
keyword things. Is willingness,
right? There's like certain, I would say, like temperatures, right? Let's say like there's hot stuff, or the maybe the easier low-hanging fruit that they're willing to talk about, right? The things that, oh, I'm spending too much money, like the things that they're willing to accept,
right?
The warm stuff, or the things that maybe other people have brought to their attention that they're also now starting to see that is causing an issue. The cold stuff is the things that solely other people have seen and nobody else.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So exactly.
There's levels to that.
All right. So this has been really a good episode.
It has.
Talking about identity and just kind of keeping in mind that, you know, like we tell you that, you know, you are who you say that you are.
Right.
But you can reach us at, go ahead, Ty.
CouchChroniclesTAD@gmail.com if you are looking to send in some confessions or some listener letters. We may read them on the show.
Also, yeah, and check us out on IG.
Yes.
And, catch all up on episodes as well.
Interact with us.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.